And welcome back to Coast. Ken Grunbeck with us as we talk about demographics and the millennials. And Ken believes that the millennials could have a huge influence on the 2020 election in November. We shall see. But let's get to your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Ken Grunbeck with us. Ken, do people generally change as they get older? I mean, do they become, are they liberal when they're younger? They become more conservative when they get older? What do they do?
Well, when you're like 1 or 2 years old, you want what you want when you want it. You want it now. You want it for free. You're a liberal. I mean, forgive me, but that's pretty much what it is.
A liberal baby, right?
A liberal baby. And when you're 10 years old and you have more toys than the other kids, and you don't want to give them to the other kids because they don't deserve them, then you're a conservative. So the more stuff that you amass...
But if you give it to the kid, you're a socialist.
We tend to be liberals as young people, and we tend to be conservatives as older people. It's as simple as that. All the math supports that.
Right. So people do change as they get older.
Well, like I told you earlier, hippies became Republicans.
That's amazing. I would have thought they became Democrats.
No. I'm telling you, all you had to do was amass some money, pay what you considered to be too much tax on, and to people, you know, giving your wealth to people that didn't deserve it, and suddenly you're a conservative.
And so then as this is happening, then you look at the pool that's available, and then you make your predictions, I guess.
Exactly right. You know, and right now, you know, one of the things that people ask me all the time, so why are we fighting? Why are we fighting? Why is the whole nation up against arms?
Oh, my God, it's horrible.
Okay, well, let me give you an example, okay? Imagine a Thanksgiving dinner. Okay, Thanksgiving dinner, you have the grandparents, you have the parents, and you have teenage kids. And all of a sudden, a political argument or a political discussion takes place. The grandparents and the teenagers are polarized, totally polarized, and the parents act as a buffer. True? I mean, they support the kids.
And then people start throwing the turkey around.
Yeah, right. So now take the parents out of the equation, and you have a Thanksgiving dinner where you have only the grandparents and only the kids. Well, that's what you have right now, because right now we have a small population that is 36 to 55, very small. So their influence is not felt. So we have the older people and the younger people, and they are fighting like crazy.
And there's no mediator.
No mediator, exactly.
Let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to San Francisco. Carlos with us. Hey, Carlos, go ahead.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. It was touched on retailing and banking. And as your guest probably is aware that, prior to 2000, the toy industry was really trying to find a footing. And in the emergence of multi-channel retailers, such as big box retailers like Walmart and Costco and things like that, where you just had a single line channel like Toys R Us. And the CEO then, John Eiler, was really trying to figure out, how are we going to preserve market share? And then also about the early 90s, mortgages, we really saw these really drastic declines in interest rates. And we saw, different innovations in how to buy a house where you didn't have to save up for years and years, 40%, and then get your house. And this resulted in a lot of reconveyances of houses. And so there was a lot of transients in neighborhoods as people were always move up buyers. And so my question with regards to millennials and the generation, with regards to banking, are we going to see changes in banking where the emergence of peer-to-peer lending, where banks now might become, say, exchanges for these kinds of forms of peer-to-peers, so that you have these kind of real estate, micro real estate investment trusts that could be traded on Wall Street, and yet the community of these demographic subsets of consumers could somehow participate more personally in some kind of investment gains in coming up with these types of portfolio of mortgage products. And with regards to retailing, it seems, at least the perception that I have, is that there's this aversion to big box or any kind of corporate monolithic kind of entities. And so does that suggest perhaps that we might see the reemergence of the kind of neighborhood retailer? And on the point of retailing, as it refers to this kind of micro-lending and micro-subsidization, as far as the politics, are we going to see the elimination of super corporate PACs and something like the Bernie Sanders campaign model, where there's going to be kind of a more popularity type of investing? And those are my questions.
Carlos, that's the longest question I've ever heard.
Huh.
Well, let me tell you this.
We've got a million of them for you, Kenny.
I speak to the banking industry all the time, and one of my favorites is credit unions. Credit unions' share of the banking industry is like 8%, 7 or 8%. It's tiny. It's not big. Big, and you know, banks have the most share. The millennials are going to favor the tenor of credit unions because they're kinder, friendlier, smaller, and you're going to see a tendency for them to. For credit unions right now to grab more market share from banks with the millennials. And that's number one. Number two, millennials are not going to go into the physical buildings. They don't need to anymore. I don't even know why we have physical buildings, but they're, you know, we do. In terms of, you know, how they're going to finance things and how they're going to, you know, order their finances in general, I really don't know. I think things are changing dramatically. What we will see, though, is with 88 million of them, that whatever change is going to take place is going to be profound. And I hope that answers your question, but I kind of feel like your question was so long and my answer was so short it didn't.
Oh, you probably got close. Carlos, thanks. Appreciate it. Next up, let's go to Peter in Florida, Port Charlotte, Florida, east of the Rockies. Peter, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I wanted to ask your guest. Here in Florida, I've been saying for months, I think the Democrats have a handle on this demographic shift and trending that you're talking about, where the Republicans are relying more on conventional measurements of political success, such as economy, social cohesion, and things like that. Where that's why, for example, here in Florida, the Democrats are trying to get a million felons to vote, as your guest knows, I'm sure, being from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also, I think Andrew Gillum was trying to get 16-year-olds to vote. They're not coming out and saying it, but am I picking up on something here that the Democrats are more perceptive about these trends?
Yes. They're more sensitive to millennials, and millennials tend to be more sensitive, if you will. And I'm in Bonita Springs. I'm not that far from you. I'm watching this, too. The idea of getting felons to vote. Do you realize how many felons we have, men felons, between the age of 25 and 55?
Oh, astronomical. And by the way, most of them are listening to you right now on this program.
20 million.
It's huge.
It's one-third of the men that age, one-third. It's a subject that I bring up in my presentations because I tell folks, I said, you need labor? I said, give a felon a second chance.
It's right. If you give them a second chance and they deliver, yeah, You've got a great pool to pick from.
You have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful pool. In fact, I don't know why we've done that. I really don't. But I sincerely believe that the Democratic Party is much more sensitive than the Republican Party because the Republicans say it's the economy, stupid. And I really don't think the millennials are going to buy that.
Interesting take. So who there at the Democratic Party, do you know him, who is a great demographer? Somebody's telling them something.
Maybe they read my book.
That's possible.
You know, you want to freak out? If you go to Google and if you go to Google and you put in Ken demographics, the only person that comes up wall to wall is me.
Is you?
Yeah.
Look, if I were a CEO of a company, I would make your books mandatory reading for my marketing staff.
It would be. Thank you very much.
It's a no-brainer.
Yes. Thank you very much. That is exactly correct. Yeah, it is. I can give you so many examples of things that have gone south because people seem to think that economics precipitated demographics. And when it's the other way around.
I mean, if we sold Nike shoes, for example, I'd call them all in and say, who's our audience? Who are we trying to sell? What's our available audience? How big are they? Are they getting bigger or smaller? I wonder how many of my marketing team would know the answer.
You know, the first question I ask people is, how big is my end user market? And is it getting bigger or smaller? Because if it is, you just said it. George, you're smart.
I've learned from you.
if your end user market is getting bigger, you have an opportunity. If your end user smart market is getting smaller, you have a problem and you better address it.
And you better address it, and you better be a genius in marketing in order to get to those people. As you've said, increase that market share, because then you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to chase market share. You really don't. What you want to do is you want to go fishing where the fish are.
That's right.
Yep.
That's the smartest way to go. Do you get out of the business if the market share or if the available pool is too small? Do you decide, I'm not going to sell that product anymore?
Well, you remember my American Honda story. I mean, Honda, Kawasaki, Suzuki, and Yamaha.
Yep.
Starting in 1986 to 1992. They didn't have to worry about getting out of the business. The business got it out of them because business dropped 80% and they all closed.
I mean, here's a question. You know, you see these advertisements on television for these specialized canes for people who need them to walk. And, you know, your market can't be that big. Yet they're making these canes and they're selling them. I don't know if they're making any money with them. Is that an industry to be in?
Yeah. Here's what's going to happen. I'm in Florida. The elderly people in Florida, George, are 75 to 95. It's the silent generation.
Now, are there a lot of them?
Well, that's the point. There's a ton of them, but what's going to happen is the number of elderly people in Florida is going to double. And whatever needs that are being...
Well, your market share increases then with that.
It's going to double. I've been warning legislators here in Florida. I said, you think you understand elderly because you have them. I said, the elderly that you have was derived from the smallest generation of the last 100 years, the silent generation born 1925 to 1944. There were only 50 million of them. You're about to get hit with 80 million baby boomers who will live longer, which means that everything elderly in Florida, health care, elder care, and death care are going to double.
We're going to a first-time caller in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Jack's with us. Jack, I only came to you because I like to say the name of the city. I'm kidding.
George Zori, big fan.
Thanks, Jack.
Pleasure talking to you.
Glad we got you on. Go ahead.
I got to say, I love you. I've listened for years.
Thank
Your
you.
Guest is going to make me rip my hair out. I'm 34, and so therefore, I guess I fall within this millennial category, and I have a father that's a boomer. And fortunately, I'm at the top of the income bracket for millennials. Yet, nonetheless, I owe more debt than anyone from the prior generation would, having my education as an attorney. I find nowhere that I can rent at a reasonable rate as I would were I from the prior generation. And I'm paying into Social Security that I can't have any reasonable expectation of collecting on. So I have a hard time taking these millennial comments seriously whenever serious millennials like me are looking at the actual accounting of what we should expect.
Now, is he one of many, Ken, or what?
Yeah. Unfortunately, if it's education debt, if it's student loan debt,
they're all stuck.
It's like $1.5 trillion, and it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts.
And that's a real problem, too.
It's a serious problem. Here's a recommendation I would make for the caller from Cucamonga. Move to the Northeast. Rents are cheaper. In fact, housing prices in my state of Connecticut are dropping, and I'm not happy about that, actually dropping. Housing prices in California, especially, you know, if you're in a decent area, are nuts.
Oh, that's crazy in California.
Yeah, it's way too much. So, and if you're an attorney, we're going to need a lot of attorneys. So, I can't give you an answer to that. I'm really sorry about the massive debt. I really am. I don't know what to do about it.
When you talk about the demography, you're not saying every millennial is doing great.
No, I'm not saying every millennial.
You're talking about companies that would market to a millennial. That's a different question.
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, most of the student loan debt for millennials was not from law school like this gentleman, but it was from for-profit colleges that took advantage of minorities.
Yeah, by the thousands.
And that was tragic. And we should have never allowed that.
Jack, thanks for the call. Keep plugging along.
Yeah.
If you had a choice, Ken, to be in any generation, which one would that be?
Boomers. I like who I am.
You do?
Yeah, and I'm on a leading edge. I'm an older boomer.
Would you be a boomer because you think it's the smart place to be, or you just happen to like it?
I just enjoy who I am, and I enjoy what I do. I'm blessed with a very, very unusual vocation. I'm one of the few demographers on the planet that can express it, which is, you know, what I've been told by the State Department. And in fact, the State Department said to me, the representative said, not only do you understand demography, but you understand marketing. There's nobody in the State Department who understands marketing
no,
at all.
That's no, that's right. Which brings up the other question. Okay. If you were a company, who would you prefer to market to? What generation?
Oh, right now, Generation Y. Yeah, millennials, hands down. I don't want to market to the baby boomers because I pretty much have them figured out. But I think if I'm a marketer, the most exciting challenge you could ever have is this new monster market, and they're going to be fine. They really are. They're going to have jobs. They're going to raise families. They're going to own houses. They're going to drive cars. It's going to be good. And we are the only world power and the only industrial nation that has a Generation Y. I mean, a labor force like that. China doesn't. South Korea doesn't. No one in the EU does. Eastern Europe, Russia, nowhere. No. United States.
Book still available?
Oh, yeah. The book sells very, very well. And not only that, and I want to encourage people. Jamie Moy and I took a long time to write this book, a long time. We took 2 years.
Which one now we're talking
it's
about?
It's called Upside.
Upside, okay.
The Upside book. And it is bone straight, accurate description of markets across the United States.
Like I said, it's a must reading for a company. It
yes,
should be.
Absolutely.
Ken, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with final phone calls in just a moment. Upside, profiting from the profound demographic shifts ahead. It's really a fascinating science when you think about it. We'll be back with final calls with Ken Grunback on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about pop magic, so get ready for that. I'm looking forward to that. And when we come back in a moment with Ken Grunback, we're going to continue talking about the demographics. Fascinating. It's just a great science. I'm really learning a lot here. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're back with Ken Grunback, his website, kgcdirect.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You really provide a great service, Ken.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the calls. Walter in Pennsylvania, welcome to the show. Hey, Walt, go ahead.
Hi, George. Always great to talk to you again, buddy.
Thank you, Walter.
George, what Ken said about the millennials has me concerned. George, with all due respect, the Constitution says you got to be at least 35 to be president. Then isn't it ironic that according to Ken, anybody over 18 can vote, and should somebody with that limited amount of experience be allowed to vote for somebody to be president when you got to be at least 35 to be president? I think the millennials are far too able to be brainwashed. They're impressionable. They're narcissistic. And along comes somebody like, ironically, a quote-unquote old man like Bernie Sanders, who is pretending to be like a messianic figure that's going to forgive all their debts and essentially saying, well, vote for me, and it's going to be like winning the lottery. He knows how to demagogue the demographic, so to speak. So I think that's the danger I see in in the millennial generation.
What do you think, Ken? Are they too impressionable?
I think young people are impressionable. You know, what do they have to lose? They're
already behind the eight ball, right?
No, yeah, especially you know all of the poor millennials with huge, student loan debt. Yeah, if they're promised or at least it's hinted at that that's going to be forgiven. Yeah, it's very appealing to them. I can remember back in the hippie era, and I'm sorry to keep on bringing that up, you know, how impressionable they were and how far off they were and how everything changed when they grew up. And that's the thing that I'm looking for here is I believe the millennials will grow up just like everyone else did.
Here's a quiz for you. What was another name for a hippie? Ready?
Yeah.
Beatnik.
That's right.
Remember that?
And well, beatniks were like late 50s, and they became hippies in the 60s.
What was the name of the beatnik in the Dobie Gillis series? Maynard G. Krebs.
Maynard G. Krebs, that's right.
Yep.
Very good. I didn't realize that you were that old, Georgia.
I go way back.
Yeah, I know. Have you been kept alive by science? Or
When Marconi invented the radio, it was my voice that was going through those airwaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to the other calls we go. Let's go to Mark in New Hampshire. Take it away, Marco. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, George.
You're not Mark. There he is. Hi, Mark.
Hello. George and Ken, thank you for the privilege of your audience. And I'm older than you. I have gas receipts for 26 cents a gallon. I've got a couple of points. Amazon was turned down in New York, while here in Kingston, New Hampshire, we on the planning board, Amazon has purchased the property, the 800,000 square foot facility they're putting in, with 186 bays. It's really gonna
huge.
Bring the area to life.
It sure is.
And the other thing is, we could put 100,000 people to work tomorrow if we opened up Gull Island and the bridge trestles that carry the Alaskan pipe. There's room for four more pipes up there, and put those people to work building the pipelines, and there's enough oil in Gull Island to last the next 200 years at the rate we're going. And demographics, you're doing a wonderful job, Ken, and we really appreciate what you're doing. And
thank you.
Not to touch on the coronavirus, but Boston Logan Airport arrested someone heading out with 21 vials of DNA back in late November. And unfortunately, it hasn't been a big story. But the demographics are so important to business today. Toys R Us went out of business.
Right.
They're on their way out.
Right.
What a shame. What a shame.
Times
the millennials, don't have any value of anything old, sentimental values. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, they haven't been in that kind of situation yet. I sent my mother an old song today, Ken, that Dean Martin had sang. It was one of her favorites. It's
really?
You Belong to Me. And she loved it. I sent it to her via YouTube to my sister, who let my mom listen to it. Now, how about that for technology? You couldn't have done that 20 years ago.
That's wonderful. Well, listen, the reason that the millennials are letting some of the big brands go by the wayside is because it's very, very hard to brand millennials because they don't respond to traditional media. They don't respond to TV or newspaper or magazines, even billboards, and forgive me here, George, and radio. They just don't respond to them. So it's very, very hard to brand them. So what they do is, and that's why craft beer is so popular. In fact, craft beer is now outselling Bud Light.
That's pretty high.
That's pretty high. I got in big trouble saying that at a conference that was sponsored by Bud Light.
Well, you know what? I hail from St. Louis, and Anheuser-Busch is based there.
Yeah.
They've got bought out by a Belgian company, but they are one of the most aggressive marketers I've ever known.
Yeah, well, they won't recover Gen X, oh, excuse me, Gen Y millennials, because they can't brand them. It's remember the beer wars?
We had and they came up with a different beer for as many different concepts as they could come up with.
Well, you can't do that now because you cannot reach this monster 88 million consumer body with traditional media. You just can't.
They like Facebook, don't they?
Oh, they're very fragmented, and advertising on the internet is like a bottomless pit. It really is.
Yeah, it is. You've got to reach them in a whole different way.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And the way you reach them is by doing everything right, because you need the reputation. Because once the reputation starts online, you're very healthy. But it's also very fickle, because you can do really good, really good, really good, and then screw up once and you're done.
That's all it takes.
I know.
That's all it takes. They were talking to a politician one day who was booted out of office, and they said, "What happened? We thought you were going to win." He said, "I screwed up on a slow news day."
Yeah.
And you got to be careful.
You got to be very careful.
Next up, let's go to Annie in Alabama. There you go, Annie. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking my call.
Sure thing. Again.
Yes. I can answer your question as to why do the news media pay more attention to a few COVID-19 deaths than 16,000 flu deaths, and the answer is twofold. First of all, it's because the symptoms are so similar that now public health officials are thinking that many cases of COVID-19 are misdiagnosed as flu, and also because
that could be true.
It has a high mortality rate.
Well, see, and I don't believe it has a high mortality rate. I think they are underreporting the amount of people who have it. And, you know, if you have 10 people that you say have it and 3 people die, you're at a 30% mortality rate. But if that number from 10, Ken, is really 500, then it's way lower.
Makes a big difference.
Yep, a huge difference. I think the death counts are the same. But I think the amount of people running around with this disease is probably 5 times higher than it is. And the mortality rate would go way, way down.
Man, I hope we get to the bottom of this soon. I hope this is a case of a virus hitting modern medicine here in the United States. And that's what I'm counting on.
Let's go to Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the program, Eddie. Go ahead.
Thanks, George.
Sure.
I have one simple, quick. By the way, I've seen the letter from the Italian legislature that wanted to put Marconi in an insane asylum. In case you didn't know, he had to escape to England to get capital to build his wireless. You know, he said, "We're just going to talk into this box, turn the knob on, go over the hill there, and our voice will go through the air." And they thought he was nuts.
I was in the stagecoach that drove him away when he got home.
I have one simple question. You're talking about a staggering figure of every 8 seconds, a new millennial voter, and 8 million going away, and so you got a 24 million swing. Now, here's my question. I know Trump won, I think, Pennsylvania for the first time since 88, non-Democrat, but here's my question. With the Electoral College, are you breaking this? Can you break this down? And here's the thing, is they love Bernie. Now, my understanding is if the powers get Biden in there, that they won't go vote for Trump, but they won't go show up and vote for if it isn't Bernie, then they don't vote for Biden.
They just won't vote.
Right. And so I'm wondering, I mean, it sounds like the Democrats can't lose on the numbers you just threw out, but I'm wondering if this could make that much difference, Ken. I mean,
sure.
You're going to be able to break this down on Electoral College, because if we were European Common Union, Hillary could have been president of California, so it doesn't matter if they have 100% Democrats out there, you know.
If you're asking me if the millennials, if Bernie doesn't run, will they still vote? That's a good question. I hope they're not disillusioned.
Would they be motivated enough to get out and vote?
That would be heartbreaking if that was the case.
If you were addressing the Democratic Party right now for 2020's November election, what would you be telling them?
I would tell them to make Biden as soft as you possibly can, to make him, because I think that's what they were embracing with Bernie Sanders, and that is he was like a nice old grandfather. And
right.
Forgive me for that.
Who wanted to give you everything.
Yeah, who wanted to give you everything, and who loved you and was, you know, just being kind and soft and going to give you everything. I think I would encourage the Democratic Party to, if there's any harshness in Biden, take it out.
Well, I think President Trump realizes now that you have to deal with other people in order to get your policies and plans done.
Exactly.
And you just can't bulldoze your way through anymore. And Sanders can't do that, Biden can't do that, and President Trump can't do that.
I hope he realizes that.
Yeah.
Me, you know, big time.
Next up, let's go to Tucson, Arizona. Robert's with us, west of the Rockies. Hey, Robert, go ahead, sir.
Hi. Going back to the discussion on the election, regarding the millennial liberals out there, most of these people, like the older liberals, who do not all become Republicans, by the way, just look at California, they tend to migrate to the big cities, as you know, like the West Coast, Boston, New York City. Yep. The presidential election is going to be decided by the Electoral College, as many have said, not the popular vote. So the millennial Bernie Sanders supporters, many of which won't be interested in Biden even after the Democrat convention, I think Trump will just win for another 4 years. One more comment. By the way, the real estate in the Northeast may be getting lower in some parts of Connecticut, but Boston is still in the top three or four
still
areas
high.
Of the country.
Yep, still is.
I'll tell you about that. It's because the population in Massachusetts is increasing. The population in Connecticut is
flat,
going down.
Isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Ken, let's take one more call or two. Let's go to Kevin in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Kev, go ahead.
Hey, George, thanks for taking.
You are very well. Are you still there?
Hopefully. Boston. 68,000 that die each or let died last year, the 0.1% of 1%. The problem is as you said, the death rate that's being reported. If it's a 2% death rate. Now we're up to 1,360,000 people. And if you divide that by 360 million people in the country, that's one person out of every 265. They just canceled the Arnold Schwarzenegger Health and Fitness event here in Columbus. And we had competitors coming in from 83 different countries.
Jeez.
This was done 4 days before this event.
They're panicking.
Well, I don't think it is, George.
You think it's smart to do that?
I think if you take and this is what the governor said, the death rate now is between 2 and 3% is what they believe. And they're basing that on people they lose, they're not looking at this country, they're looking at China, they're looking
sure.
at Italy, they're looking at all the other.
Right. Based on the cases that they claim they have compared
right.
to how
they're
many
saying,
people have died. But my point is that those people who have the virus, it's dramatically higher than what they're reporting. I don't think they have any idea how many people are sick.
Right. And you know why? Because I don't think they've had the test kits.
Right.
I think this has been flying around for a long time.
I think so, too. And now, in terms of the deaths, I think the deaths are what they say they are, because when the person's dead, they're dead. And right. whether it was the regular flu or the other one, we don't know that yet. But
what I'd be interested in is what's the death rate happening compared to the prior year for flu in general, because that would then give us a picture as to what's actually probably going on.
Those numbers are probably pretty flat. I think the regular flu will kill up to, at least in the United States, 60-some thousand people a year. They've downed it. I've seen the CDC numbers that say 49,000 people a year. If they were talking about this coronavirus of 49,000 people dying in a year, they'd be panicking like crazy. Ken, we're out of time, but do keep in touch with us. We love talking to you, okay?
And I love being on. Take care, man.
Okay, my friend. Ken Groenback. Up next, let's talk a little bit about pop magic. That's right. A simple guide to bending your reality.